Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I am Jim Galante, along with Dusty Schutte and his dog Biscuit, co-starring in today's show. Right, Dustin?
That's right. He's always the main attraction. He's the one that everybody wants to hear from, talk about. I'll open this show with a story. There was one time, this was back when I was single, many, many years ago. I was walking the dog down the street in Kennesaw, Georgia, as I did every morning because it was a lot nicer for a lot longer there. And this woman comes up to me and she just, you know, as when you're walking a dog, you know, people tend to do, they go, "Oh, cute." And I said, "Thank you." You know, knowing she was talking about my dog. And she goes, no, I meant the dog. And I was like, "Yeah, I understood what you meant. There was no need to clarify that." But so just so that way, he is always the apple of the eye of the people around me, apparently.
Well, you would not be the first guy who uses his dog as a way to flirt.
Well, I did know that, yes.
Well, we'll get Biscuit, we'll keep him in the background a little bit. We'll welcome you back. It's been a few weeks. You've been following the NCAA tournament. You've been following your Purdue Boilermakers. So I'm sure that was enjoyable for you. We're gonna hit you up on that with the, you know, the first person experience was like going to the tournament. But before we do that, we had Monday night, the national championship game, UConn, Michigan. First of all, did you have a dog in the fight?
No. Well, I don't know what all I'm going to say right now. I don't like the way that Dusty May and Michigan went about their business. In my opinion, this is another title with an asterisk beside it for Michigan, which has become par for the course up in Ann Arbor. So I actually, because of that, I would have liked to see UConn win, but ultimately I didn't really care one way or another.
Well, first of all, I'll have you explain your asterisk for Michigan, besides the fact that they're the hated Wolverines.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of tampering that unfolded to get some of those players. I know directly one player he attempted to get through tampering and did not get him. And there were a couple others players that are on that roster that he did tamper with and obviously did get them. So you'll remember a few weeks ago, the Big Ten, maybe it was a couple months ago now. I don't remember when this exactly came out. I want to say February. The Big Ten released or sent out a statement to the NCAA to try to push them to not punish any teams for tampering.
Right.
And a lot of people thought that was related to football. That was related to basketball, and it was directly related to Michigan.
Oh, really?
So, I mean, people, they didn't put any words in there. They didn't put any teams or anything in there. But because the Big Ten had a great shot to win another national title. And when I say another, obviously basketball they hadn't won since Michigan State in 2000. But this year they had won the football, three straight football national championships, and this gave them a chance to win one in men's basketball. So there's just a lot of sketchy. I would not be surprised if something comes of this. I don't know that it actually will, because that would require the NCAA and the Big Ten to punish Michigan, and they don't do that. So that's just my couple. me weighing in on some of that stuff right there.
Well, I do want to get into that with you a bit, the whole, you know, building a team. And I think a lot of our audience, we're very football-centric. So we're going to look to you for a little bit of an education on how things are going with basketball, you know, facing a lot of the same issues with NIL and transfers and so on that are happening in football. But first, you know, let's talk about what went on the court. Michigan, giving the devil their due, they just ran roughshod through the tournament. They were winning games. Leading into this game, their margin of victory was 21, 23, 13, 33-18 going into this championship game. And to be honest with you, first of all, I hated that Michigan beat Arizona, my pick to win the whole thing. So I was a bit anti-Michigan, as if I need more incentive to be anti-Michigan. But I finished up a six-point spread, but my feeling, it just felt like Michigan was in charge of the entire game.
Yeah, I thought so. So there's usually a trend you can pick up on in college basketball, probably in the NBA, but I don't watch as much since the Pacers are not good this year. But one of the things that you'll notice is, and you notice this in the Final Four game between UConn and Illinois, when you play really good teams and that really good team is on a scoring drought and you can't really increase your lead or pull away, it's a bad sign. So there was a stretch there where Michigan, I don't remember if they couldn't, if it was zero field goals or 0 points for about 5 minutes. And the largest lead that UConn could muster was 2 points during that stretch. And that's when you know, like, they were in trouble. UConn needed to push that thing out to 10 or 12 points because anything less than that, you knew Michigan was going to come storming back. And the same thing happened with UConn and Illinois. UConn had a stretch where they scored a couple points in like 6 or 7 minutes and Illinois got out to like a 4 or 6 point lead. And you just knew like when that happened. So yeah, I thought Michigan did a really good job of dictating the tempo. I thought, I will admit though, Jim, I thought that was a terrible bat. Like just as a basketball game was bad. One of the top three worst NCAA championship games I can remember. Butler, UConn is number one. Maryland, Indiana in 2002 is probably number two. This one is probably number three. But yeah, I mean, at getting out in transition, the thing that Michigan does so well because of their length is you saw all season long, and especially even last night or Monday night, excuse me, was they are just so long that guys rush shots around the rim. And so even when you get a wide open look at it, guys short arm shots, they put too much on it, wrong angle, whatever the case might be. So even when Michigan isn't like shot blocking or playing extremely well, just their size and physicality bothers people in the painted area. And that's what made them so good. Not even just the fact that they're good defensively or they can shot block or get out in transition, but just the fear of having those threats in there can sometimes, I think, was a big factor in Monday night's game.
Yeah, and, you know, investigating Michigan a little bit with this game, I knew they were big, didn't realize how big, didn't realize that also, I think it was three of their players in their previous home were centers. So it's like they'll have three centers out there, essentially, guys who are used to playing inside, used to defending inside, blocking shots. And yeah, they don't have to block a shot to affect a shot. Mm-hmm. So they made things rough on UConn. I think that's also part of what made this a bit of an ugly game. And Michigan wasn't making their threes either. So it was a bit of an ugly game.
Yeah. And I think it wasn't until the end of the second half when UConn started hitting threes, there was a point where on that one side of the floor, teams were 0 of 18 or 0 of 19, one of the two on three. So it made you wonder, like, is something going on with the rim? Why can't they make it on this end of the floor? And so it was an ugly shooting game. I thought the officiating to me, I know I'm speaking to a former official here, but the way that they had a tight whistle in the first half and then just seemingly let everything go in the second half was bizarre to me. And then there was another aspect of the game. Oh, they were just out of control. It felt like when teams would get in, especially UConn, when they'd get out in a fast break, they were just running as fast as they could. Like, I thought that the Yakety Sax music was playing somewhere in the background because they were just out of control, losing the ball, couldn't. It's just like at some point, just slow down. You're not going to outrun Michigan. You're not going to beat them in transition. That's not something. You better have a clear path to the basket if that's going to be the case. And even then, you might get your shot wiped away. So,
you mentioned officiating. Boy, collegiate basketball these days would be a tough game to officiate. So big, so physical. Mm-hmm. it becomes even, I know there was a call in the lane. To me, it looked like the offensive player initiated the contact, knocked the defender down. The defender gets called for the foul. And I'm like, that's not the way I would have called that. And it just, in the hooking now where they have to, they seemingly every time they have to stop the game and watch the video on it. So it's a tough game to officiate. One last quick note, which I'm only bringing up because you're a Purdue guy. And I know the name Rick Mount came up one time before in our shows. And if you don't know or don't remember Rick Mount, look him up. One of the greatest pure shooters ever. And I heard the story one time. He was on a court, something about a bet to make a shot from about 35, 40 feet, whatever. It goes around the rim and out. And, the other guy won, and Mount said, the rim's off. They measured it. It was off just a fraction of an inch, and he knew it. So that's my Rick Mount story of the day for you, for the Purdue Boilermaker. But the game itself, Michigan, and we will talk about how they brought the people in, brought the players in through the transfer portal, but just this run through the tournament was so impressive. But it, what was, I thought, the first couple of weeks, a great tournament, this Final Four, we really didn't eat out of the three games. We didn't even have one good one.
No, I thought the same thing. And you know what is funny is, like, when you looked at it on paper, those Final Four teams, you thought, this is going to be a murderer's row. Like, this could be one of the all-time great Final Fours. And again, it was probably one of the worst. Now, there were, Illinois-UConn was a close game, but it wasn't well played. And the same thing last night. Like, I think you're correct. I think Michigan was in complete control of that game. But UConn made it interesting there at the end. But interesting doesn't mean good basketball. So, yeah, that was a far cry from one of the better Final Fours that we've had, unfortunately, because the way that those four teams had played to get to that point, I thought we were going to have an excellent 2 days of basketball in Indianapolis. And it just didn't deliver.
And what I thought might have been the game between the two best teams, Michigan and Arizona, I thought that might be essentially for the national championship, and I thought would get an epic game. Not even close. All right, Dustin, that is it for quarter number one, but we are not done talking March Madness. We'll pick it up, look at some of the other highlights from the tournament and your experience. We're going to do that after this break.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent. Led by Mike V and powered by Penn State students, it's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Dustin Schutte. It's quarter number two of our show. Dustin has been out for a few weeks because he was really following closely the basketball tournament. So I tell you what, Dustin, you had your Purdue Boilermakers not only make the tournament, but it was the first weekend of the tournament. They were playing in your hometown in St. Louis, right?
Yes, they were. Yes, they were. And that was very beneficial for me, Jim.
You had to like that convenience.
I did. I've been very fortunate. I'll preface this before I talk about that. I didn't go to San Jose for the Sweet 16 or the Elite Eight. It just wasn't in my budget this year. Next year, I noticed I left aside a little bit more money so I can make the trip wherever they go. So I didn't make that trip, but I did was able to, because March Madness is a busy time. So I've been fortunate the past 2 years. The Big Ten tournament has been relatively close to me. Last year, it was Indianapolis. This year, it was in Chicago. last year, the first two rounds of the NCAA tournament were out in Providence, and I told this story about how I got my introduction to the East Coast and some real basketball knowers out there from the East Coast, a couple of UConn fans who, instead of shaking my hand at the end of the night, were, oh, no, we on the East Coast. We got a hog, man. After knowing these guys for all of 3 hours.
Call 3 hours is a long-term relationship out here.
There you go. So I had an awesome time out there. And then Indianapolis was actually the Sweet 16 last year. So most of these have been close to home for me. And then, yeah, this year, St. Louis, which was really nice. And it's just, to me, somebody who grew up watching the tournament, wanting to, as a little kid, play in the NCAA tournament, you know, maybe play for Purdue or whoever would be willing to give me an opportunity. You know what? There's not a lot of opportunities for 5'8" white kids that can't dribble. But it's really, to me, it's a really surreal feeling to be able to go out there and see March Madness on the court and just soak in all the tradition and all the fun that comes with, you know, being able to participate in those tournaments. So it's been, the last couple of years have been a lot of fun for me to actually be able to cover it after, you know, watching it on TV my entire life.
It has to be. Now, help us out here, because Penn State fans have not had a lot of opportunities to go watch the tournament or reason to travel to follow their team. So how is the attendance and how does that work where you have a session where there's a doubleheader, you know, there's four teams? Is it pretty much split up 25% for following each team, tickets that way? Is it, you know, is the building half full for each game because the other fans don't care that much about it? How does that work?
Yeah, it's interesting. So I would say most of the building is for people who buy a specific session. So if you buy, you know, the first session, you get into the first two games. If you get the second session, you get the second two games. Or if you just buy the session pass, you know, the full day pass, you get all the games in one day. With the family, so they usually fill in too. So there's like, most of the arena has their seats for this respective session, but then when you get in between games, so in our build, I can't remember which game was first, but for example, there was Kentucky and Iowa State. So behind Kentucky's bench are all the Kentucky parents, you know, girl, family members, friends, and the same thing behind the Iowa State bench. Now, after the games are over, those fans, I don't know if they go somewhere else, if they just leave the arena, and then coming down will be the Purdue fans and friends and family on the Purdue side, and then the same thing with the Miami, Florida fans and family. So that kind of rotates and changes, but then the rest of, and I don't know, maybe they swap sides, like maybe, you know, they say, here's your ticket for game one, and then you'll have this seat for game two. And I don't know how that works, but it's, you know, for the most part, I would say people probably buy both sessions. It's usually pretty, and it depends too. So we had in our region, Purdue fans traveled really well. Iowa State traveled really well. It's a close game for them. Mizzou was in town, so there was a huge fan base for them. And then Kentucky has a really good fan base too. So the Enterprise Center here in St. Louis was full for most of, if not all of the sessions that I was able to attend. So that made it even more fun. Providence was, like last year, not a lot of Purdue fans made that trip, just simply because the previous year they'd gone to the Final Four and people had spent all their money going out to Phoenix, I think. And they knew the Sweet 16 was in Indianapolis, so they, you know, could save their money and go to that. As far as the media is concerned, it kind of just depends. So, like, Queens College doesn't send a lot of media. There's not a lot of people covering Queens basketball. Same with Miami, Florida. They might have one or two, but Kentucky has 20, 25 different outlets. Purdue is actually one of the Big Ten teams that, and maybe you've experienced this. I know you're up in the press box for Penn State games. Purdue, even though it's a major program, doesn't have a lot of outlets that cover it. There's five I can think of off the top of my head, and that might be it. So, but there was enough. There was enough there. There's enough national audience. Like ESPN's going to send people to each site. Fox, CBS, a couple different. So But they change each in between each game. So for the Purdue game, I get to sit right there on the court, Jim. And sometimes those players, they get in the way of your view.
Darn those players.
But no, it's really cool because you get a lot of different views, a lot of different experiences. And then obviously you get to see firsthand, like the glory of victory and the heartbreak of defeat. Yeah. And you get that up close and personal. And so, you know, it's one thing to see it on TV, but then when you're in those locker rooms or you're in those press conferences and you just see how much it means to those kids. And you know what's cool to me? I think the coolest experience to me has been, so after Purdue beat Queens, was you just go into the press conference. And I was kind of sitting there waiting to hear what Queens had to say. It was their first ever appearance. It was the first time they're eligible. And it's just like, these kids are just so appreciative. They're like, and, you know, you would think they'd be heartbroken about losing, and they are sad that their season's over. But at the same time, the kid was like, I'm just so thankful because there's going to be so few people who play college basketball that get to experience the NCAA tournament. And it just kind of puts it in perspective. Like, we talk about, oh, 76 is too many teams. We shouldn't. But at the same time, like, there's 360. So you take, you know, the 365 teams or whatever the number is, multiply that by 15 players. And what's that number that doesn't ever get to play in the NCAA tournament? So it's just kind of, it's one of the things that I don't think anybody thinks of. Even if you're a 16 seed and get blown out by 40, you still got to experience it. Maybe you make an early three and you get an early lead in the game and you have a lot of excitement early. You know, there's just a lot of really cool things about the March Madness tournament.
There are, and I think that's what has always made it special, is you have players from Queens College. You know, where is that even from? And They are most likely not one of the 64 best teams in the country.
Yeah.
And We know that there are teams from these small conferences who get in who they aren't one of the 64 best teams, and you get some team who in 12th place in the Big Ten who says, hey, we are better than them. We'll win a couple more games then, you know? And if it's only about having the best, very best teams, it's very different. And it's not. There's more going on here than that. And you know what? After it goes down from 64 to 32 to 16, when you get to the end, you know what? You've cleared everybody out. It's only some of the very best teams who are left there, Dustin.
Right, exactly. And this is like, that's what makes it fun. And that's what, until recently, that's what made bowl season really fun. Like, you might get a BCS bowl in the old days, or whether it was just, you know, the Sun Bowl or the Heart of Dallas Bowl or whatever the hell it was called. Like, seeing those teams, like, you might see, you know, a Boise State make a big run, or you might see a North Texas have a good season or something like that. And it's the same thing with the NCAA tournament. Like, those kids get to be rewarded. I don't feel bad for the kids. I shouldn't phrase it like that. I don't feel bad for the schools that have a lot of money and they just aren't very good. Right. Like, those kids shouldn't, the kids who were at those other schools should get the opportunity to play. Like, they work just as hard, and you shouldn't exclude them. Like, those teams, who are you going to put in the tournament? Like, say, Indiana. You think Indiana's going anywhere in the NCAA tournament? No, they're going to go the same place High Point went. Maybe they'll win a game, and then that's going to be the end of their season. So let High Point, let some of those mid-majors have those moments. Indiana doesn't need that moment. I'm not just saying Indiana because I got Purdue behind me, by the way.
Well, but your point is valid. I think it's like Indiana has no one to blame but themselves for not making the tournament. And the same, I'll say that about any of the Southeast Conference, Big Ten team. Penn State is an example of that. Now, Penn State has not expected to make the tournament. Hey, I don't know, maybe you put Penn State and High Point on the court, Penn State would be favored to win and probably would. But it doesn't change the fact that High Point got that opportunity. They earned it. They won their conference. Who knows what conference that they played in. But they got on the court with a Big Ten team, and they beat them. And, you know, you and I chatted about this a little bit because it was in St. Louis, and I got on you for not going to the game. players from Santa Clara got to play against Kentucky.
Yeah.
And, you know, they made a three-pointer at the end, looked like they were going to get the win because of it. And Kentucky throws up a prayer three-pointer to put it into overtime. But if you're a Santa Clara player, you got a story for the rest of your life.
Yes, absolutely, completely agree. And you know that, and even I go back to the high point, like that guy who won them the game. Did we talk about this?
It was his first two-pointer.
Yeah, no, that's exactly what I was going to say. I forgot we hadn't chatted since the tournament started, but the only two-pointer he made all season was that one. Like, what a great story that is. Only in March.
Yeah, absolutely fantastic. And at the end of the day, should this not be about the fans also, okay? What the fans want to see. And we do want to see David versus Goliath. We do. And every once in a while, you know what? David knocks down, you know, Goliath. And we saw that with High Point. So, and then, of course, we need those people to clear out, you know, for later in the tournament. We'll talk about that more, though, when we come back right after this break. Stay tuned.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent. Led by Mike V, empowered by Penn State students, it's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number three. I'm Jim Galante. He is Dustin Schutte. Back after a few weeks, and we are so glad to have him back on the air with us. Dustin went through the whole process following his Purdue Boilermakers, so he got to see them. I know something us Penn State fans don't get to see very often. A college basketball playoff team. Is it as good as it seems, Dustin?
It is. I think it's great. Yeah. But again, it's like there's just so many different stories out there that I think are a lot of fun. And then obviously you get to, you know, one of the underrated aspects is, yeah, you get to watch the team you're covering, but then I don't want to say you're done working, but when you're working and it's not like you have to be in the moment, you can kind of just watch. Like I watched that Kentucky Iowa State game, and it was close for the first half. You watch the Mizzou Miami game. And so you just get to watch, you know, fun, good basketball. Maybe you can see a little bit of history when you're there too.
Or you miss the session where Kentucky plays Santa Clara and they hit back-to-back three-pointers, right?
Yeah, that's the hard part about being so close to home is you're like, I don't need to go to that first session. I'm going to be there all day anyway. And then you see one of the best games of the – you don't get to see one of the best games of the tournament.
I'll tell you, that was unfortunate for you. Just a wonderful game. But I think in some of the conversations – one of the talking points I've seen plenty of is, gee, with the transfer portal, we're not going to see the Cinderella stories anymore. It's going to hurt the tournament. And I don't know. I didn't look back at history, but I thought this was a very good tournament with a lot of interesting games. We still had Cinderella teams. I was just looking back at, you know, the first round, we had – number 12, High Point, beating number 5, Wisconsin, which, by the way, was the highlight of my bracket. I actually had High Point winning that game, and I did not and still do not know where High Point comes from. We had
somewhere in North Carolina.
Is that right? High Point, yep. North Carolina. Oh, okay. Yeah, that makes sense. I didn't even think of that. We had a couple 11 teams win. it's hard to call Texas a Cinderella story, but they came out of that first four, won a couple games. They beat number six BYU. And by the way, we also get a chance to see some of these. AJ DeBanza might be the best player in the country out of Brigham Young. Never, I hadn't seen him play all year. I saw him play in a losing effort. He still put up 35 points, 10 rebounds, and played all 40 minutes, Dustin. To me, that's the kind of stuff that makes the tournament really worth it.
Yeah, I mean, you get players that you had never heard of, never seen before. You think about – now, this kid has been on my radar just because I'd seen him a couple times because he went to Indiana State, and I try to keep up with as many Indiana teams as I can. That's just the Hoosier in me. But Robbie Avila, who plays for St. Louis, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Larry Nerd, whatever you want to call him, Milk Chamberlain.
Yes.
Yeah. With all the nicknames. That kid is really good, and he looks like he has no business being on a basketball court, but he is really good. I thought St. Louis, honestly, was going to give Michigan a run. But those are the type of kids. You think back a few years ago that Jack Golke from Oakland went off, and they upset Kentucky. I don't remember if they were a 13 or 14 seed that year, Oakland, but they were the Cinderella story. So you get these kids who are probably – you know, if they're not player of the year in their conference, they're probably at least, you know, first team all conference players. And you just never hear of them because you don't think to watch. And, you know, even as you mentioned, BYU on the west, out west, you probably rarely get to see their games because they're so late at night. Or maybe you just don't care about Big 12 basketball. And some of those other, so even some of those other players, I was unfamiliar with the kind of talent that Texas had. I just didn't want to watch a ton of SEC basketball. So it is fun to kind of get those players. I do think it's more fun when they come from the little schools, but sometimes you get those kids. I remember several years ago now, Michigan again, they lost the title game to Louisville, but Spike Albrecht was a kid. I don't know that he had played in the entire tournament or played very sparingly. And then he had like 12 first half points and was the reason Michigan even had a chance in that championship game. So you just get those type of moments in March that just produce. And I'll tell you another story that was close too. Just to your point, Purdue had a kid who transferred in from North Florida, was dealing with some shoulder injury, had never played in the NCAA tournament, spent a couple years at Columbia, 1 year at North Florida, was going to be a fifth year senior at Purdue, and helped them early in the season, played in 12 total games, but really played well in the first two or three when they got, were dealing with some injuries. And in that first game against Queens, he was able to come in, play in his first ever tournament game, his only tournament game, and made a three. And, you know, it's not like it didn't make a difference in the outcome. But that's probably a moment that that kid's going to, you know, remember and enjoy for the rest of his life.
By the time he talks to his grandchildren about it, it'll be he put up 30 points, including the game winner at the buzzer. Yeah. Hey, and yep. You know what? That's okay. But again, those are the stories. The kid you mentioned from St. Louis, and if you didn't see St. Louis play, he was a big kid. What was he, like 6'10"?
6'9 or 6'10, yeah, I believe so.
And a bit of a wide body, and not necessarily in a good way, yep. Wearing the nerd glasses. And if you just saw a picture of him, you'd say, maybe he was in the band. And he's the kid that in every high school, I think, had one of these kids. I remember we had one of these kids, you know, 6'8". So they put him out on the basketball court. Didn't matter if they had any talent or not. And that's what this kid looks like. Except The crazy thing is he had talent. This kid, especially, he would good passer, would go out, could shoot threes, and he was like a point forward or point center. You know, he was doing playmaking for their team. It was a fun watch. I was rooting for St. Louis.
Yeah, I think everybody was. I think everybody, that was the one that I think, excuse me, because I think every year, maybe every couple years, there's always one team from the mid-major level that you think could make a run. And I'm not including Gonzaga. They're essentially a Power 4 team playing in a G5 conference, or a G37 conference. Yeah. Mid-major conference. But I thought St. Louis was a team that could give Michigan a run for their money. They just you know, at some point, Michigan's athleticism overtook them. St. Louis got into some foul trouble. But, you know, you do have every once in a while, sometimes people don't like those Cinderella stories going too deep in the tournament because they think it maybe waters down the field a little bit. I don't care if a mid-major makes it that far, especially if they're a quality team. And I thought, you know, if St. Louis was in any other bracket, maybe they could have gotten to the Sweet 16. I don't know that they would have gotten to the Final Four, but they had a really good team. If they played anybody but Michigan, I think they would have had a real shot.
Well, at this point, like I mentioned, that those margins of victory, the closest game Michigan had to that championship game was a 13-point margin of victory. I mean, they won three games by 21, 23, and 33, and then a close one only by 18. So Michigan was, you know, particularly hot at this point, which also just leads me to, you probably don't remember this, but Penn State gave Michigan a game.
Yes.
Penn State was down by a point with the last possession. A basket would have been a game-winning basket. They miss. They foul Michigan. Michigan makes one of two foul shots, and Penn State then, you know, throws up a prayer. But Penn State was within 2 points of Michigan. So we could say Penn State was within 2 points of being a national championship-type team, Dustin.
Yeah, and that wasn't – they weren't alone either. Like, they – they – got beat by Wisconsin. They almost lost to Nebraska when Nebraska's two of their top three players were out for that game. Down 16 on the road in the second half to Northwestern. So they almost got beat by Wake Forest and TCU earlier this year. So one of the reasons I knew Michigan was super talented. One of the reasons why I didn't think they would win at all is because I thought that they would get a little too careless with one of those, like a St. Louis or like a Tennessee, and think, oh, we're just going to cruise to victory. And then they get into a game where it's a little too tight and they think, oh no, now what do we do? But they kind of helps when you just never get into that position whatsoever.
No, they didn't. The postscript to the Penn State Michigan matchup was the second game they played at Michigan. Penn State kept it within 42.
I don't remember that game at all. We just wiped that from the memory.
I am trying to forget it. But there were also, you know, within the tournament, again, reading the media reaction to it, you know, not many Cinderella stories. I think I followed the tournament a little bit closer this year than I have in previous years. There was some phenomenal basketball games. Unfortunately, we didn't see them in the Final Four, but you know, Duke beat St. John's in an absolute war.
Yep.
And then UConn, in an amazing, a classic game, beats Duke by a point. And we all know, you know, that classic ending to that game. So there were some tremendous games. Even UConn beating Michigan State, which I think some of these, when you see Duke and St. John's and UConn and Michigan State there, it really kind of speaks to those experienced coaches also.
Yeah, the job that Rick Pitino's done at St. John's has been phenomenal. And it's good to see them. I'm not one who thinks that like a team has to be good, excuse me, for college basketball to be better. Like some people will say, oh, college football's better when Texas is good. I don't usually buy into that. But I do think that at least for me, there's a little nostalgia there when teams from the Big East outside of UConn are really good. The Villanovas, the St. John's, even Providence every once in a while. When those teams are good, it just like it feels correct. Because the Big East was so dominant for Georgetown, they haven't been good in a long time. There's a lot of those teams that I have no business rooting for, but I just root for like the nostalgia factor in the old Big East to do well every once in a while, just because I think they're fun to root for. And I know Rick Pitino's got his, say skeletons in the closet. I say bats because I think he looks like a vampire, but but he's done a really good job. And yeah, Izzo. I guess John Shire, Dan Hurley. Yeah, I mean, that was a loaded bracket. And I was actually surprised that UConn beat Michigan State. I thought the Spartans would get that one done.
I would not have been surprised if that happened. I want to talk more about this St. John's factor when we come back.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent, led by Mike V and powered by Penn State students. It's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number four of our show. I'm Jim, he's Dustin. We're talking the NCAA tournament and all things college basketball. When we wrapped up, Dustin, you were talking about enjoying when some of these old Big East schools have a good run in the tournament and how you're nostalgic for those teams. And I'll go even a little deeper with it. Older than you, out here, the Big East, you know, when Villanova had Raleigh Massimino and Carnesecca, Luke Carnesecca was coaching at St. John's, and Thompson at Georgetown.
Georgetown.
The other part to it is that St. John's can make New York City care again about college basketball. Villanova could do the same thing for Philadelphia. John Thompson, Georgetown could make Washington, D.C. care about college basketball again. And I know this may sound like that East Coast bias, and maybe it is, but it's like when those large cities, when New York cares about college basketball, it means the New York media cares about college basketball. It means the national media will care about it too. So I think when those teams from the large cities are good, it carries a lot of fan base following.
I agree. And again, so I was in Providence last year and St. John's was there and they had a tremendous showing of fan support. Spike Lee was there. They overtook that building. Now, I think they were probably the closest team in that region, but I think they were also a two seed, so they had earned that spot. I mean, it was it was fun. I like I wasn't around for most of like the dominant Big East days, but hearing the chants of "Let's go Johnnies" in the arena, it just kind of gave you chills. It was like, this is what it was like back in the day. And I don't want to say unfortunately, they're playing Arkansas, so it wasn't like a big, you know, if you would have, I don't even know of a non, but maybe if you would have thrown like Syracuse in there, who's in the ACC now, so they play, gosh, that would have been fun. You know, something along those lines, or a Maryland from the Big Ten, you know, one of those other East Coast schools. I think that would have been a lot of fun, but their fans were great. Some of them were a little obnoxious, but that's to be expected, but their fans were great. They showed up and you could tell like they were bleeding for that team to be good. And it's not just to me, it's not just obviously it's a New York pride thing, I think. And you could probably speak to that a little bit better because it's certainly not all those people went to St. John's, but there's a lot of pride in that program. And so I thought that was a really cool experience to be able to watch them and their fans get to enjoy it. Now, they got beat, so it wasn't maybe the most fun for them, but just that experience from last year. So it was fun to see them back in the Sweet 16 and have a real chance to make some noise.
Now, I think our audience pretty much knows I'm a small town guy. I live in a small town. Mm-hmm. But when I first got out of school, I lived in Washington, D.C. initially, and that was during some of the heyday of, you know, Georgetown. And also Virginia then with Ralph Sampson. I know they weren't real close to D.C., but that was a great rivalry there. But I then lived in Philadelphia for a very long time, and I went to Penn State. But I adopted, you know, Villanova and St. Joe's, and especially Temple. I loved the Temple basketball team then. John Chaney I think, is a very underrated coach. What he did, he was one of those guys who had – he got a lot of Philly kids who went to Temple and weren't the 4- and 5-star kids. But, you know, there was actually something that's called a Philly guard, okay? And as you might guess, there's a certain toughness that came with being mm-hmm. labeled a Philly guard. It's but – you know, there was a lot of pride in the town. You mentioned, you know, New Yorkers who didn't go to St. John's, but rooting for them. That becomes more natural when you're part of a city. So like during those years in Philadelphia, you had your pick, you know, like I said, St. Joe's, Villanova, LaSalle, Temple, even Penn. It was great. You were going to have at least a team make a run in the tournament, and you could claim ownership of any one of the teams in the city.
Yeah. And you know what? I'm going to walk back my statement a little bit, because that St. John's game, do you know who they played? They played Arkansas, but the coach of Arkansas was John Calipari. So I'm sure there was a UMass tie, you know, of them wanting to probably be, you know, that guy who led UMass to the Final Four. Was it the championship game or just the Final Four? Either way, doesn't matter. But yeah, I mean, like, there's just something about Big East basketball, the old Big East basketball. Now it's not. As an Indiana kid, I love Butler. I love the history of Butler. It's not a Big East school. Creighton's not a Big East school. I don't even know if Marquette is a Big East school. Like, you can't take those teams in the Midwest. Yeah, I think it's a lot of fun when those Big East schools are there, the big cities get involved. And it's just like, you know, those are such pro sports towns, but there's something that makes it a little bit more fun, a little bit more electric. And I think it's even a little bit more fun to beat those teams when they're really good too. Like, because you know, all those people take so much pride, whether it's Philly, DC, New York City, Boston, anywhere up there, they take so much pride in their schools and in their sports teams that it's more fun for everybody.
Well, and also some of those coaches, which were part of the identity of the school. You couldn't mm-hmm. say Georgetown without talking about John Thompson, Villanova without Raleigh Massimino, St. John's without Luke Harnesecca, but also the persona of those guys, like a Rick Pitino, Jim Boeheim at Syracuse,
yeah,
and John Calipari, who you mentioned. Now, there was this tremendous rivalry between Temple and UMass, and yep. specifically John Chaney and John Calipari. That rivalry and those two coaches going at each other really framed my feelings about John Calipari. Now, you know, fast forward a lot of years, I've got a nephew who was a huge Kentucky basketball fan. He loves John Calipari. Loves him. It's still, he follows Arkansas now because of Calipari. So nice. You can imagine these discussions he and I have. He'll be, you know, he won't say, "Did you see Arkansas play?" He will say, and this is exactly how he puts it, "Did you see Cal last night?" And he doesn't mean the Cal Bears. He means yeah. John Calipari. So that's his attachment to that guy. And my dislike of that guy. But I will watch, because it's John Calipari coaching a team, because I'm going to be rooting nonstop against him, Dustin.
Yeah. Yep. That's true. That's true basketball fandom there. We had so many. I mean, I remember growing up, obviously the two legends in Indiana, Gene Cady and Bob Knight, right? So when Purdue wasn't playing, you would tune into the IU game to watch Bob Knight lose or lose his mind, one or the other, right? So yeah, that's I know that's it, because those coaches were there for so long. And I think even in the Big Ten, like, you look at Judd Heathcote, Gene Cady, Bob Knight, Lou Henson, from Illinois. Like, there's some of those guys were just there for so long, and you either loved them or you hated them. So back, like, 80s and 90s, probably even before, probably go back into the 70s. 70s through 90s, college basketball was just peak level. And it's still fun today, but it is more fun when you get some of those traditional programs and the old Big East back into it. Just makes it a much more enjoyable experience, in my opinion. But I think that's, I don't think it makes the game better. I just think it's a nostalgia thing for me watching some of those old big, old tournaments. And I think I've told you, and maybe even said it on the show, about every 2 years, I will go back and watch Requiem for a Big East, the 30 for 30 documentary, because it's just so fun.
Well, there's such a great history to the Big East, but you know, you say it's just nostalgia, you're reminiscing. For me, it goes a little bit deeper. You know, I dislike John Calipari from his UMass days, okay?
Right.
I would venture to guess the majority of fans were not even born when he coached at UMass. But that's how long-lasting it is. Maybe it's just me. Maybe I carry a grudge, Dustin. But my opinion was shaped so early. And by the way, I know that a lot of people feel about John Chaney that way. When he coached at Temple. I know there are a lot of, you know, rival teams just totally dislike the guy. And because I admired the guy. I thought he was one of the great coaches, and he did so much with the, I'll say, limited talent. He didn't have the talent of Kentucky or an Indiana would have, or those Duke, you know, those elite teams. But boy, those teams hated to play Temple, and they knew they were in a game.
Yeah. I mean, his teams embodied toughness. And he's just like, he just looked like a tough guy. Sleeves rolled up, towel over his shoulder, just always looking like he's pissed off at the world. It was, he was a great. And I think even Purdue 1 year played Temple in the NCAA tournament. I don't remember if it was go to the Sweet 16 or I don't remember what round. I was too young, but just watching, it was so frustrating because you thought you should beat him. But they they played so hard and they were so physical and tough. It was, they were a great team to watch as long as you didn't have to play them.
Yeah. Well, the John Chaney story that I love, and maybe I've told it on the air previously, I apologize if I have, but he was once asked about the curfew for the team. You know, what time is curfew? And his response, we don't have a curfew. However, we practice at 5:30 a.m. in the morning. And if you were out late the night before, guess what? I knew it. So, you know, just by scheduling practices so early. And to him, he thought of each possession of the basketball as gold. His teams always were close to the top in the country in fewest turnovers. So he had a distinct style. This is how we play. We value possession of the ball. And when you start to see, again, you see a Tom Izzo team, there are certain things you just know you're going to see from them. And you know what? I start to feel like Hurley at Connecticut, we're feeling that way about him. He's becoming that kind of guy. Anyway, Dustin, that's going to have to be the last word for our show. So great to have you back. Thank all of you. Make sure you come back next time for the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent. Led by Mike V and powered by Penn State students, it's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.